It is 8 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast. It is 8 p.m. in the Middle East. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to speak to one of the most accomplished men I ever met, a professor from Harvard, a man that moved his life to the Low Country, lives in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, educate children, teach them how to do math, and coach the women basketball team to a championship again and again. He's the most prestigious trainer that I can ever talk about. The guy is wonderful, and on top of everything, he even won the Man of the Year as Family Man. And I wanted to welcome to the show Mr. Bob Sulik. Bob, welcome to my show.
Well, thank you, Orly. I hope I can live up to at least a little bit of what you've laid out there, but I appreciate it. It's always to be in the presence of someone like yourself. I've respected you from the moment I first met you.
I appreciate that so much coming from you. And Bob, trust me, there are people who talk the talk, but you walk the walk. And every day you make a difference by teaching children, giving them an example, and holding still when everything is going crazy. And you know, today in the world is a chaos. It's an incredible challenge to everybody, especially the leadership that is lacking all over the world. And, you know, in this time, everybody is trying to go to basic. And something we learned too, you know, very well, that we must have a guide and somebody we trust. I trust you, Bob, with all my heart. I know that you are a true man and you teach children, and that is our future. Tell me, what is your perspective as far as now? What is happening as far as you're concerned?
Well, Orly, that's not an easy question, but I will tell you this, that God didn't make bad kids, and I've never had one. You know, the fruits of God's greatness is in our kids, you know, and our hopes and dreams are, and there are great kids out there that still think that they can change the world. They may not be as jaded as some people and think that it's not possible to do better, but the new crop coming around the corner is they're aware, they're engaged, they're talking, they're believing, they're curious. They think the world can be a better place, and they're taking us along for the ride. And that's not a bad group of fellow travelers to be with.
Oh, God bless them. And I can hear them in the background. I know you're in school, and you're in one of the best schools that we can ever have, the Hilton Head Preparatory School, which give accomplishment a way of living. And I'm very thankful for everything they are doing there and holding still with everything is going crazy. I know that you, on top of you teaching math, which is a very complicated material, you also teach chess in your free time, and you also give lectures about the world, about philosophy. How do you have all this time, to manage everything? It's amazing. Well, you're a mathematician, that's for sure, but it's amazing. Tell me about your lectures, something that new that came in the horizon.
Well,
that was just...
Yeah, there are two things that I do. You know, I teach a course called The Literature of Social Reflection, which looks at the world and ourselves through a different lens. When we read books, we look at a series of books by living authors. We look at authors that are women, people of color, international writers, a new modern day list of classics. And the way we look at them is kind of novel. We look at them as what they say to us. What do they personally write to us? What messages do they have to tell us? And we write papers and have discussions based on the themes and the topics that come up to this. And we study everything important to teenagers, drugs, sex, rock and roll, love. Does anybody love me? Am I worthy of being loved? Why did God create me? What purpose do I have? Does my personal experience amount to anything? Will, is there some, you know, method to this madness that's going around me? But so in this course, you know, like in the first book that, you know, we looked at is James Agee's Let Us Now Praise Famous Men. You know, Agee was a Harvard graduate that was given an assignment to go to Alabama and look at sharecroppers and write a story about them. And he ended up calling them God's chosen people. These people that could not read or write, that maybe had a Bible in their home, but couldn't open it up to read even one sentence of it. He found that, you know, his belief was that God preferred the company of these sorts of souls. And, you know, the first thing we study is, who are the teachers? Where do you learn from? Is it in the classroom? Is it the mathematics that we put on the wall? You know, who are the educators, and where is school? You know, our claim is that's wherever you're standing. All of us have got to be on a podium, and all of us have to have an opinion, and it has to be an educated opinion. And that's what we train ourselves to do, I think, is to elevate everyone around us, to make the world and those that we touch, the circle that we reach, better than we found them. I think that's what God made us, is not for our own honor and glory. You know, it's honor of man versus honor of God. There's no choice there. It's got to be honor of God. You know, we
absolutely. Amen to that 1,000 times, of course, Bob. And you know, you were talking about the chosen people. The innocence of the believers is the most pure thing that people can have. And people that, you know, sometimes different culture give colors to the opinion. And to go from, you know, from Harvard to a place where people didn't even know to read, and to find a fresh mind to embed the with glory of God, you know, the Bible, and to give them the essence of belief and truth, that's a great accomplishment. And I salute that man that did that, and I recommend you for teaching it, because people need to know that there is a God, and it's not us. And we only a servant. We are here to make our duty, to accomplish something. And you, sir, you're doing it again and again. And yeah, and you know, one thing I always use in my sentence, in my strategy, is that everything is mathematics. And I don't know if you can second that, but for me, you know, people need to calculate whatever they do and to understand that the next step is ahead of them. It's like math. It's always nature, you know, that will answer to you. Whatever you give is whatever you get. That's something that we all learn, but not many follow that suit.
Yeah, you know, Orly, I believe the same thing. You know, I think one of the purposes of being put on this earth is to be happy. Now, happiness doesn't necessarily mean for ourselves, but to make others around us happy. And we can't do that until we develop ourselves. If God gave us all a wonderful mind, and if that mind isn't developed, if our spirit's not developed, if our bodies aren't developed, we can't possibly use the skills, the tools that God gave us, you know, mind, body, and spirit, to make others better. You know, I think that's, if we sit in a room in front of a computer and die in that room, I don't know that we make it to heaven or not. You know, I think we've got to be out, you know, working with people and teaching and learning and listening, you know, being a receptacle for other people's pain, being a storyteller, sharing our stories, and having other people be in the moment with us. You know, I think it's one of the highest honors that you could have, is to share story, you know.
Right.
You know, to have that trust where people are won't judge
open.
You. Yeah.
Yes, and they're hoping to get, comfort, too, because people are really secluded for so many years. America went to be what is for number one, to all of a sudden it's an open society where all the networks just join, venture together, and we all in one big community. And it's change. It's a change of venture. It's a change of being, and people realize that. And I think they're going to be happier in that sense because they have more essence of other people, and they can reach out to many more. Of course, not all of them are really good, but most of them are really, the world is a good place. Now, let me ask you one major question. You know, America is the leader of the free world for quite some time. And, education is the keyhold of America over the world. People don't, in America, they don't realize that what they learn by second grade, the world still need to understand. Why we never use America as a source of knowledge and, a teaching instead of trying to, emphasize every time again and again the mighty of the power of the military instead of using the brain, which always works so well for America, yes. Because they always say democracy, free world, give freedom to everybody. But as you say, if you don't know what it's encompassed, if you don't know what law in the book you have to put, how can the rest of the world follow suit? I wonder, the community, the academia, do they ever calculate the fact that they are not reaching out far enough to teach the rest of the world a page of America?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Orly. And I say this all the time to my students. The reason that slaves were slaves in America for 100 years is because the slave masters made certain that slaves couldn't read or write. How do you capture a generation or several generations of people, and you burn their libraries, you make certain that the intellectuals are killed off, and you don't allow people to become educated. Now, what breaks the bonds of slavery? Not only, the African-American slavery here, but in general slavery. What is bulletproof? It's not money, it's not power, it's education. Education can't be stolen, bribed, cheated. Education has to be earned, and it's the one thing that if you wanted to change the world, it's the place to go. Just think of any issues that are bothering us, drugs or teenage pregnancies or, mistrust. The one thing that seems to work all the time for, like you, I don't think we use it often enough, is education. It frees the mind, it frees the soul, it allows us to dream, it allows us to try and reach beyond our grasp. It explains things to us, it explains ourselves to ourselves, it explains our role in life with God and perhaps what that existential yearnings that we have. Why is it? What ought we be doing with our lives?
Also the capability. Yeah. People learn about their capability by learning. You cannot know what you where you belong or what you can do if you don't learn
right.
it. If you don't start something, that you all of a sudden you start to paint and you become a painter, or you start to write and you become a writer. If you don't go with the education, the first step, you cannot continue. Now, Bob, it's amazing to me that America has in every port of the world they have a military base.
Right,
but they never,
right.
never go and have a university base. And it's saddened to me because I tell you the truth. In Israel, there is no American university. the best friends of Israel does not, you know, doesn't share education. And of course they say the Jews are smart, the Jews, you know, are capable, but it's not true. In Israel, for example, do you know that 50% of the students are not allowed to even graduate high school? By
wow.
by the dynamics. Listen, it's something that really fathoms me constantly, and it's disturbing to me. And I don't know why nobody push the Israeli government to change that rule. But every year, all of a sudden, you got only graduate 50% of the population can go, you know, the student can go and graduate. And this year, oh my God, we had an accomplishment. 52% got to graduate. And I was asking, how dare they? How dare they not even allow those children, you know, by the age of the 16, those children already know that they cannot graduate because the teacher assigned them like they are not, you know, a failure or they are disturbance. And, you know, a teacher, a dojo of some school in, you know, in no place can decide the future of a student, and all of them decide on the 50% of the population, which are, by capability, smart people. And I wish somebody can hear my calling, because, you know, America, if there is anything they need to push Israel to do, is to let the children learn. Because if you stop them from learning, you cannot create a democracy per se. Then the opportunity does not exist for other 50% of the population and become the enslaved of the system. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's true, Orlean. Tragic. You know, it should be criminal, you know, but
right.
You know, I really agree with your point entirely. But to be consigned for the rest of your life to a certain class, you know, at the age of 16 or whatever, and to be told that you can't go on any farther, or that, you know, you're too dumb, or you don't understand, so therefore this is your lot in life. Now, we know that Einstein didn't speak for the first 6 years of his life, and when they ask him, you know, at some point, why didn't you talk? He said, "Well, I had nothing to say." You know, now if he'd have come through the school system, we would have confined him to no education. We would have said, "You can't do it." But there are plenty. God gave everyone talents and gifts. And it's the job of us to pull those gifts out. We all have them, you know. Nobody is born without what they need to get through life and to be, you know, to be respected and to add to this pool of well-educated and a populace, a group of learned people that make the world a better place. Nobody should be denied that, you know.
Right.
And you know, one of the good things about America is that, you know, we do have universal education. Everybody goes to school. You have to go to school until a certain age. We try and push people to go in, you know, and there is a college for everyone. You know, we have several thousand colleges, you know, and most people within 50 miles of where they're standing, you know, there is a college or so. You know, even out here in the middle of South Carolina, there's colleges nearby us, but there it should be a place for you to go to school. Now, it doesn't have to be Harvard, Yale, or Stanford, you know, but there and in some places that doesn't work for everybody. But we have schools for all women. We have schools for the historically black colleges. You know, we had 47 of those colleges sprung up right after our Civil War, and you know, we have schools for Catholics, we have schools for any nationality.
For Jews, there is the Shiva University.
Yeah, and you know, we have schools for Native Americans. You know, but everybody, at least here the possibility exists. Now, not everybody takes advantage of that. You know, but you know, the other nice thing I like about America, there are a lot of things I don't like. And people that live outside of the sea are sins much greater than we do. But the other thing that I like is if you go to military service, you know, you can get At one point, you could get a free education right after the wars. You know, we've been in war forever, as has your country. But, you know, with the GI Bill, you can go to school for free. Now that's about half of your education paid for free. But,
that's why I love America so much, because I had the grace of God to be living in America and have the opportunity to study there. And no matter what age I was enrolled in classes. I wanted to learn, and as long as I could, you know, I had the time, I went to classes. And trust me, I never stopped learning, and I never stopped thinking, you know, I know it all, because once you start learning, you know that you know nothing. You know, there is so much to know.
Yeah, we're like Socrates. We know nothing. But, we're lifelong learners. That's the trick, until the day we die. Now, we can give up sleep, and we can give up food, but we can't give up learning. We got to keep doing that forever. You know, I want to make one other point, Orly, about the future of education. I teach this class called Future Studies. There's a group of international think tankers in the United States and other countries, and they meet periodically, and they have conferences. They're called futurists, and they look at the world 20 years down the road, 30 years, and try and see what is possibility out there, like it's future of war, future of religion, future of food, future of technology, you know. And there is also a piece that we are looking at. It's called The Future of Education, and what that might look like and how different it will be. You know, and I'd like to share some of the things that I've read about this and have thought about. But it is, good and bad, bittersweet, that one day everybody can be sitting at their home in front of a computer and have the best Harvard or Stanford or Yale or Northwestern teachers on the screen, and they could be taking a class that they previously could not afford to take. You know, not everybody can afford $60,000 a year to go to Harvard, or can be poor enough, like in my case, to go to school for free because you were financially disadvantaged. But everybody could sit in front of a course and learn from the eminent professors of the world. You know, that's the great news. You know, now the bad news is that we don't have physical contact with them. We can't raise our hand. They don't get to read our papers. We don't have discussions with them, because there might be 100,000 of us out there watching the same, downloaded course. You know, but we do have access to that. For no matter if we had never attended college, we could still sit in and do that. So, you know, that's what we do with our students. We download these. So education might be the way of the New York Times or something. Eventually, then, you know, one of the joys of my life was when I was living in New York, you get that 5 pound of Sunday paper and you get that ink stain all over you, and you sit there for 4 hours on a Sunday and read the New York Times. But that's going to be digital one day. We know it's going to happen. It'll be a sad day for me, because I'm used to writing when I read. I like to have manuscripts in my hand that I can underline and highlight and write in the margins. But that's going to disappear at some point.
I think that the children of today, they are used to the digital, and there are a lot of features in the computer that teach you to put notes on the side. But as you, I love the hard book. I like to read my book. I don't like it digital. I like to see the paper and read it, and not, you know, and even go through it if I want, or read it or not. But a digital is just segmented, and what we do usually, we read the highlights, and then we let it go, and we're missing a lot of points. However, the fact, the news about education, that everybody can have access, that's a great feature that America needs to push to the rest of the world, because right now we are facing savages coming from nowhere. I don't know what's their problem, why they decided to use killing as the way of educating their children, and how we can save them, how we can save that many. You see, God didn't put this in our way for nothing. It means that we miss something. we didn't do right on their behalf, probably, because if they're learning what those savages are teaching, it means that nobody else teach them else.
Right, right. That's what they were brought up into. It's a generation of, you know, like just to give you an example, I know this isn't a very popular thing, but when America went into Iran and Iraq, and I heard people saying, wait a minute, you're going to put 100,000 American troops on, you know, Arab soil. Generations of kids will grow up hating you. You know, that's probably true. You know, generation after generation, for whatever purpose we were there for. Maybe it was oil, maybe it was to stop, you know, the killing. You know, I hope it was for good purposes. I have my doubts about that at times. But the fact is, we haven't been able to penetrate that cycle of violence. We haven't been able to get to young generations and educate them. All they know now is, you know, how to strap yourself to a bomb and walk into a restaurant, sit down, you know, how to...
And kill, you know. And they kill themselves, you know, it's like,
yeah, and,
how
and
can
no,
people
yeah,
teach
yeah,
death?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no religious book that says that that's good, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you can't find anyone that would say that this is in our religious work, you know, our, you know, where God says... this is fine to go in and kill innocent people. You can't find that. Now, America has done that. You know, Israel has, you know, we've done it, but, you know, that doesn't make it right, you know. And we've been taught to hate. We've been taught to retaliate, you know. But maybe we haven't been taught the right things. Maybe we haven't been taught to love and to forgive and to understand and listen to people and let people speak. You know, and let people tell their stories and share their stories. But I know there are initiatives. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I know there are initiatives out there. I know, for instance, in one of my students went to Ireland, you know, a few years back, and you know, it was Catholic youth and Protestant youth together in Belfast, you know, where there had been turbulence, and they would do summer programs together, and you're realizing that we're not as different as you think, you know, that we're all God's children. You know, we're all cut from the same thing. Now, we may not look alike, but who really cares? You know, we may have different
right.
skin color. We may have different beliefs, but that doesn't make that much difference. You know, it's the similarities in what we believe in, what we stand for. You know, we want to be good fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers, and we want to find happiness, and we all want to dream that, you know, that the world is going to be a good place and we're going to help make it be a better place. That's not a isolated opinion. Everybody wants that. Even people that we would consider to be our enemies, for the most part, everybody wants that. You know, the message somehow has been diluted that the only way to do that is by doing mischief, by doing harm, by killing, you know. That doesn't occur in any religious work, that's the way to do it.
I think that what we actually did when we went all force out, and I said we because I was a part of America always, and it's in my heart, so I speak always as American, you know, being Jewish and Israeli in one end, but, you know, in art always American, and I understand the American understanding very well because I was taught by America, and the gift of education was given by them. When we went all force out to Iraq or to anywhere else in the world, we never balanced it with the goodness. You know, we sent a mission to help. But
right.
The balance is off. Once the balance is off, it tipped the scale. And that's what we're seeing. Because if we ever thought about how much we spend on defense everywhere, you know, even the Israel,
right.
How much they spend on defense and how much they really spent on you know, doing good on the other end, helping, educating, sharing, you know, doing something that to balance it, it will be, it could have been different. And maybe maybe that's something that we should think about now that we're all going again to Iraq, and everybody is like, you know, in the footstep of, you know, if Israel now, we have Syria, we all full-pledged war, and it's gushing to Turkey and Iraq, of course, and Iran is playing there, but it's still a very dangerous place. We need to think what we're doing.
Orly, let me make this point, which I think you'll agree with. You know, what is America good at? We're good at killing people. We're good at making bombs. We're good at making bullets. We're good at...
I wouldn't do that. I would say we, America, because it took the role of the leadership, they're the policemen of the world. Mm-hmm. Killing is not the purpose. Defending the world is definitely something. I know so many Americans, troops that go there with a heart and a chewing gum in their pocket, and they share it, and they're doing everything in their power not to hurt the population. But once they get threat, once they bomb, you know, the Twin Towers, once they show us that they are talking, you know, they are not willing to cooperate or to work with us, or they want to change the world. Listen, we're talking about New World Order. Did the education, ideas came on what we're going to do with this new world order that they're trying to make? They're trying to cover those women. They're trying to implement Muslim. So it's not like we're talking about something that that is, you know, by only doing good or stop killing. They're coming after us all. It's not even funny anymore. We are at risk all over the place, every day, every time you go off to another place, you have to pray and, you know, count your blessing, because you never know what's going to happen. Some airplane disappears, some terrorists can go online. You know, even 1600 Pennsylvania was under, you know, somebody crazy went in. So we have no choice by defending the this world, and America is doing the job, and we have to thank you know, from the rest of the world, we have to thank America. And and you know, being American, it's really hard because you don't want to see American killing, but the truth of the matter is, when people are coming at the door and American heroes come to save us, We bless America every day, so there is something that you have to consider. And I know we have so much to talk about. And Bob, with you, it's always a blessing, because a mind like yours and a heart like yours and your family is, you know, I know your family very well. I know Nancy; she's a dear friend of mine, and your children, the blessed, you know, kids. They're so lucky to have you and Nancy as their parents, which give everything to teach them and doing right. And I expect always great things from you and your family, because you are an exemplary to this world and to American lifestyle. So when you say America, I think about you. So I can only bless and thank God for having friends like you. So please remember that. Please remember that America is good. It's only we need to turn this page and take the leadership again and give America the opportunity to maybe come true before God. You know, it's all started, remember 2002 when they wanted to remove the Ten Commandments from Alabama court? Remember the story?
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, it's boomerang. You know, you wanted God out. Look, what are we going to do? We need to bring God to our heart again and bring everybody together to understand that America is good, and spread what good for America, you know, if all over the world, if you can. Right now the economy is really bad for the world, and maybe we have to be creative and think about something else. But education is the best place to start, because if you market this thing, you can make, you know, America well again, because you got the resources. They need it.
Yeah. Well, Orly, I always enjoy the way you put things in the proper perspective. You know, you've had benefit of looking through the lens from, you know, Italy and Israel and the United States, and, you know, you look at things with a kind heart, you're able to decipher, you know, the good and the bad, you know. And, you know, I wish everybody could see things the way that you see them, you know. And you know, your corrections and so forth, you know, everything that you do is with the kindest of hearts, you know. You have the heart of a lion. You always have.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Bob, it was a great honor to have you on my show. I thank you, and I promise you I'm going to call upon you again. We know we're not done. This is only a start of a good talk, and that we need to continue because the events are going to evolve, and we're going to push. And please, please, help me push for education in Israel, you know, free education, because it's impossible. It's impossible to continue in this rate. And, you know, if there is supposed to be a revolution in Israel, it will be only on education. And I don't call it a revolution in the way, you know, like riots, everything.
I understand.
But I want to be able to be to look at every child's eyes and know that he has the opportunity like the next one. Not, you know, if one of two is gone to be hardworking, you know, working in a low-income household. I really, really feel for them. So thank you again, Bob. Salute to all your family. We love you. I love you, with all my heart. I send all my blessing to you and to Hilton Head Preparatory School that gives so much to the world. I appreciate them so much. And I hope that the next year you take the championship again.
Thank you, Orlene. God bless you. I'll keep you in your family in my prayers as well.
I appreciate that. God bless you. Let's go to a break. Yes. Thank you so much, Bob. And we are back with Impossible Truth. And we just had an incredible talk with Bob Sulik, one of the masters of Hilton Head Island. God bless Hilton Head Island. They have all the champion over there. Let's go back to the real world where real conflict exists and happens every day. Israel, Jerusalem, Temple Mount. We have a very special friend, one of the major, major league players in this event, everyday events. He keeps us busy, keeps the news busy, keeps everybody on their toes. Mr. Yehuda Glick is the spokesperson for the movement of Temple Mount, and I'm so honored to have you on board. Yehuda, welcome to the show. And I cannot hear him.
I'm trying to get him back now.
All right, not a problem. So I'm going to start talking about the issue. Temple Mount is, Dennis Ross once said that the conflict in the Middle East is based, starts and it will end on Temple Mount. Temple Mount is the holy place of all for the Jewish faith, for the Muslims, I guess, and the Christian. And for some reason, since Israel was created, Temple Mount was off limits to the Jews. And for some reason, the Muslim decided that they're going to have a hold on that. I know we live in God, and that way something means that we didn't respect it enough, we didn't have honor, and we didn't do the right thing. But the question is, now that we're all back to Israel, created a state, back to Jerusalem, 40-some years that Jerusalem is in Jewish hands, giving freedom of everybody to worship. We have Temple Mount, the Holy of All, off limits for prayers. And, you know, democracy doesn't start and finish where you wish to. You know, there is a democracy, and democracy says that there is a freedom of worship and, you know, conscience to everybody. And it's supposed to be everywhere. But for some reason, the agreement that Israel signed with Jordan is not being respected by the Muslim waqf. And we have this Yehuda Glick guy that does incredible job trying to come to bring them to their senses. He's trying day and night, talking to them. He's not even, you know, he's not forceful. He's very graceful. He's very kind. He speaks softly. And he tried to explain to them, we want to have the right to come before God. This is our holy of all. And for some reason, they don't let us. And the Jews are not stubborn people, as God said to Moses. They are very stubborn. So if you think that one redhead like Yehuda Glick is going to quit, or the movement that he's leading is going to stop calling the world, you know, to help us, they're wrong, because the movement is ongoing. Movement is going to be one of the leaders in the new age, where freedom of God, of worship will be God will be everywhere. Here is Yehuda. Yes. Thank God for you. I've been waiting. I'm trying to explain your role. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Wonderful.
Can you hear me?
I started to explain about the situation on Temple Mount. Would you, can you tell the audience what's the situation these days on Temple Mount, Jerusalem, Israel? What can you tell me about it?
Okay, well, shalom from Jerusalem. Yes. As you all know, the Temple Mount is the holiest place in the world for all those who believe in the book, in the Torah, in the Bible. It is the place that God chose to place his divine presence in this world. And it is holy for millions, billions of people all around the world. This is actually potential for something very great. It could be a world center for faithfulness in the one and only God. Unfortunately, presently, there is one religion who has taken over the Temple Mount, and very non-tolerant to anybody else, and they do not allow any prayer other than Muslim prayer. They do not allow freedom of movement or any other basic human rights on Temple Mount for those who are not Muslims. Strongly, my friends and myself from various different organizations here in Israel, including the Temple Mount Heritage Foundation and the Liba and many other organizations here in Israel, are trying to promote recognition of human rights on Temple Mount for all. I'm trying to promote tolerance, trying to promote respectfulness to one another, freedom to pray for all, on the place which is holy for so many people around the world.
Right.
We truly, sincerely believe... Yes, I'm sorry?
Yes, and I saw some videos this morning about, you know, children being attacked by you know, hollered Muslim calling upon them. You know, they don't even respect children visiting. You know, it's like it's a zoo up there. And for being a holy of all, there is some conduct that they supposed to respect. You know, holy places. If you go to anybody, God forbid, if you go to the Vatican, nobody can hush, you know, to say a word out loud. And they've been screaming their lungs out. How can we stop
every
it?
Every time any group comes up to the Temple Mount that either looks Jewish or looks somewhat the Christian, or anybody who tries to express any other religion on the Temple Mount, immediately is accepted by yelling and screaming and shouting, and very often violence, not only verbal but physical violence. Because nobody else has a right to do anything else. And if, God forbid, somebody wants to recite a prayer, read a chapter from the Psalms, is immediately considered somebody who is promoting a war in the Middle East. And we have to understand that this place which is so important for all of us, for so many people around the world, this situation cannot continue. Instead of being a place which is center, a world center for peace, for religious tolerance, it's becoming a place which is the center of hatred, of incitement, of calling for terror, and we see flags of terrorist organizations there on the Temple Mount every weekend. And this is something that my friend and myself have decided we can no longer tolerate such a situation. And therefore, we are calling on people around the world who support this call, the very simple call, freedom to pray, the very simple call, freedom of respecting one another, knowing to respect human rights, knowing to respect the fact that people have a right to be different. And as I say, in what world is reciting a prayer considered an act of encouraging violence, where at the same time yelling and violence are considered something that is legitimate? And this is a situation that we here in Israel can no longer tolerate. And I'm happy that in the last four or five years, we've seen a great drive of people who are coming back home to the Temple Mount, millions of tourists from around the world who are coming, Jews who are coming, and we're not willing to once again that a violent religion should take over the Temple Mount. I mean, we think that people should be able to respect one another.
Absolutely, and you know how you actually been very cordial, because you forgot to mention that once somebody get caught even kneeling down to maybe recite a prayer, he can get arrested by the police. Yeah. It's not funny, because they force the police to arrest the man or a child. So many minors got arrested, minors, for making a leap, if they say something about God that's against the law on Temple Mount, which is unacceptable. It should be called off by United Nations. They should call off, by the World Court of Justice. Everybody needs to know that this is not going to happen. And if Jordan, that has an agreement with Israel that she signed, that to have a freedom of not worship, of access, even access, and not having any terrorist organization apply on the temple, they should, we should call upon them. I really recommend you for your effort, Yuda. I know it takes a lot of toll on you. You take in a burden, and you take this to heart. And I know that there, day in and day out, you go in and you walk, and you get the abuse. And I want to tell you that we are with you. We support you. We love what you do, and we pray to God that you'll be successful and helping all of us having a peace and quiet on the Temple Mount, because we deserve it. The world deserves it, because as long as this, the holiest place of all, is not quiet, no place in the world will be quiet, because this is the heartbeat of the world. There is the essence of everything.
Thank you so much. It really is really it's very moving to hear that we have true friends all around the world, and I know that we get support from all around the world, and really, it's an opportunity. If anybody who's listening to us right now wants to support what we're doing, wants to be in contact with what we're doing, wants to help us promote this idea, you're more than welcome to contact me. I'm at Temple Mount Heritage Foundation, which is templemounthf@gmail.com, templemounthf@gmail.com. You're more than welcome to contact us. We're looking for cooperation with other people around the world. We're looking for more and more friends, and we're receiving it. We're receiving people from all over the world who are no more willing to see such a situation, especially in a place which is really, some of my Christian friends, they tell me, listen, this is where Christianity all began, and of course, many of my Jewish friends, this has been the dream of the Jewish people for 2,000 years, to come back home to the Temple Mount, and this situation, which is really, I think that anybody, as you said, the United Nations, anybody who has Western values, anybody who knows what human rights is all about, is more than welcome to make contact with us, and we will really thank you for any kind of connections that you can get us to promote.
Absolutely, Yehuda. They need to know that we all a part of this universe, and by respecting each other, we can accomplish peace. And the fact that they are trying even to, if United Nations decided long ago that Jerusalem is a corpus of separatists, it was supposed to be a part for everybody to come and worship. All of a sudden, it become, occupied territory. And by who? By a group of people that don't even have a state or anything, not organized. And most of them are applying, the people on the top of the mount. I don't talk about the Palestinian. On the top of the mount, the action is violent. There is no one that I can say that is trying. And I heard that there is one sheikh that calling about understanding these days, and I salute him, and I hope that he can accomplish some kind of talks. And I know the Pope tried to get accomplished, something, and I know that in the Vatican they're going to have a Muslim prayer, which is unbelievable for me. And then we have to understand that something has to change. This is a moment that, we passed the Rubicon. We need to continue on.
No,
this is not something they're going to win that.
Arlie, maybe many people are not aware of that. I must say that people that may be surprised, but there are also some not so few Muslims who very often contact us and they say to us, listen, we really support and we think what you're doing is right, and we think that those who are leading a violent leadership in the Muslim religion are causing damage to us. Unfortunately, they are still a great minority, and I think that they may be a quiet majority, but I think that if more Muslim leaders would stand up and say out loud that they are against any kind of terror, any kind of violence, and of course not in one of the holy places, the Temple Mount is the third holiest place in the Muslim religion, and I think that for them, when a mosque is used as a center for war and incitement, and people from the mosque itself throw stones at other prayer at other people praying, the first people who are damaged by this is the Muslim religion, and I really call upon responsible Muslim leaders to speak up and not to be ashamed. It's firstly for respect for your own religion.
And I will welcome anybody who calls in, and we can talk and make another conversation, maybe Yehuda, because Yehuda, you came late to the show. We missed most of the thing, and we are running out of time, but I want to call upon you again and again until they start talking to us and we start talking about a world peace for real, because there is one God, and we all his children. And we need to understand that we have to go get along, and Temple Mount is the holy of all. It needs to be in peace, holiness, and respected by, humanity needs to respect that site completely. And I salute you, Yehuda. God bless you. May God protect you every day and give you the glory and the grace to give understanding to others. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Yehuda.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's go to a break. And we are back just for a small conclusion. I love that song, and I hope you guys all take the time to dance and love each other, because it's a world out there that needs some love, hugging, and those children need some real education and care and happiness. It's not for nothing that I'm here for you. It's not for nothing that I'm doing it every Monday. And maybe we'll go and expand the time frame if, we can talk about issues. The important thing is to remember, we love you. I love you. I think that you, the world, is happening. it's happening in the right direction. Of course, we have a lot of confusion. Of course, we have a lot of mud in everybody's way. But if we clear it out, we'll see it's all shining because God created a beautiful world and He gave it all to us, and we should honor it. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. I hope you have a wonderful week, you all in America. I hope the rest of the world will come to its senses and sometime soon. I wish the Jewish people a very happy Sukkot, Tabernacle holiday, and I hope that the glory of God will shine upon us all. And we'll see you, we'll talk to you next Monday. God bless you all, and take care. Thank you so much, Doug.